All right, guys, what you're going to be listening to is Shelton Unfiltered. So because of that, I decided I wasn't going to edit this podcast at all. So just know this is not me editing anything, so it could be really bad. Probably a bad idea, to be honest. I probably should edit this some. But I just hope you guys listen to it, listen to my heart. And please, whatever you do, make sure you listen to Phil Fisher at the ending of this particular podcast, where he describes, where he talks about, you know, race in America. And it's just really good. It's very educational for people. I think this could be helpful for many of you that are listening to it. And so sit back, relax, and listen to this episode of Sorry, I Did Not Code Switch. All right, guys, welcome to another installment of the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast. I am by myself today, guys, extremely by myself. I have a lot of things that I want to talk about, a lot of things I want to discuss with you guys, because I have a lot going on currently, and there's a lot going on in the world. And I think that, I want just to share a lot of things with you. Now, I'm going to post some of this, like in clips on my different social media accounts, just kind of post different clips here and there. But number one, I do not want you to focus too much on the fact of that I need a haircut. Okay. I need a haircut. I'm getting one today. All right. Everything, I will get groomed today, but do not allow my outward exterior to stop what we are going to be discussing today. So there's been a lot of, and we're going to go just straight into the podcast, what I want to talk about, what I want to say. So there's been a lot of like talk around, especially in conservative circles, dealing with some tweets that Sean King has posted. Now, before I even get going into this, I'm going to say this. I do not like Sean King. Okay. Sean King is not someone that I would wholeheartedly tell people to go support what Sean King does or what he says. And it has nothing to do with like even his politics, but just the fact of there's been some shady things with Sean King. Okay. There's been people saying that he was telling people to donate to different things, to supposedly help people that have been victims of police brutality or just racism in general, just different things like that. There's been a lot of pushback about how he raises money but doesn't give the money to the people that he's supposed to. There's a lot of people think he's pocketing a lot of this money that he's raising. So there's some things with Sean King. If you just Google it, you could search it. A lot of allegations against this man, Sean King. But Sean King, for some reason, is a very popular activist, okay? There's been a lot of pushback, even if he's even Black. I mean, there's so much pushback when it comes to Sean King, and he's addressed some of this stuff. He's addressed especially the fact that, you know, he's not really Black, even though he has a white parents, and it's all kind of stuff. You can look it up. You know, some people are thinking that he's been in blackface for years, right? Or pretending to be Black, I should say, for years, instead of, you know, anyways, pretending. So Sean King is not the guy that I would sit back and wholeheartedly endorse by any stretch of the imagination. But I think it was Malcolm X that said something similar to this, that basically you are for truth no matter who says it. You know, you're for justice no matter who it's for or against. So like Sean King, you know, he said something, right? And some of the tweets that he mentioned about white Jesus statues and things of that nature has caused many people to be in an uproar, especially people on the conservative right. Many of them are like, man, what is going on? You know, what's happening? You know, and so what's going on currently is he went and he pretty much says that we need to tear down, depictions of Jesus as a white European because they're a form of white supremacy. And all images depicting Jesus as a white European, okay, they need to be. So let me read his tweets here. It says, yes, I think the statues are white European. They claim that Jesus should also come down. They are a form of white supremacy, always have been. In the Bible, when the family of Jesus want to hide and blend in, guess where they went? Egypt, not Denmark. tear them down. He follows up that post with saying that YG is a lie, a tool of white supremacy created to help white people use Christianity as a tool of oppression. He added that white people would never have accepted a religion from a brown man, right? He begins to keep talking about need to take down all imagery, including murals and stained glass windows of white Jesus and his European mother and their white friends. Okay, so, and saying all this, you know, of course, you got a lot of people, you know, and sometimes you can tell where someone is going to, or what someone's going to say, where someone's going to go, especially depending on the news outlet that you listen from, right? So if you listen to a news outlet like, you know, Fox News, or you already know kind of where they're going to go. You know, there's a lot of these conservative publications where I honestly already know their side, how they're going to go. If you're going to talk about police brutality, I already know where you're going to go. I already know how you're going to lean, what you're going to say. And especially when you go to someone like MSNBC or CNN, you kind of know where they're going to go. A lot of the times they're just a lot of, there isn't anyone straight down the board that's really going to talk. But anyways, here you got someone and he's saying this stuff, and a lot of people are upset about that. And to make matters worse, I saw a lot like this. I saw people being upset. Like, I saw people sharing things on Facebook, talking about how they were mad over the fact that people want to tear down these statues of Jesus, right? These statues of white Jesus being torn down, right? And so I went on my Facebook and I said, y'all are for real mad that people want the white inaccurate Jesus statues to come down. This is why American Christianity is not biblical Christianity. American Christianity is so built on white supremacy that when people want to destroy white supremacy, you think it's an attack on your faith. All right. Let me be honest. Let me talk about this in general. So let me first come at me first, and then I will talk about the comments and break it down. Talking about me, let's break it down to me, right? What I did wrong in this case was I forgot the importance of code switching. See, code switching, when you're black or just any really ethnicity, minority, whatever, especially in this country, you have to put truth in a way that's palatable, is that the right word? Is a way that'll be comfortable for you know, a white audience, you know? And a lot of my Facebook friends, I love them to death, man. Many of them that I love to death that have helped me in my life with education or economically even, that have helped me in my life spiritually. What I absolutely love is they've been there for me, right? But a lot of my Facebook friends are a part of, you know, and most of them are white, conservative, you know, people. And so a lot of times when I am speaking to them, a lot of times I grew up most of my life code switching. Most of my life I lived in a way that would make white people comfortable. Because you have to in this country, you just have to do it. So because of that, I've diluted a lot of me, and a lot of people only got like 45% of Shelton. 45%. So because of that, because they only get 45% of me, they're, when they see like something like this, they're like, "What are you like?" They're like, first they're confused. They're like, "This is not the Shelton that I know, right?" And also, I know that I have turned people away from even attempting to help black people. Okay, so let me break this down. Right now, and depending on, people might listen to this later, like 5-10 years from the week, because when things are in there, it lives forever, right? So I'm thinking about, you know, my future kids when they listen to this. I want you to understand, we're living in a time in 2020 where we have the coronavirus and racism at an all-time front, like huge, like dramatically huge going on, right, in this country. And so So a lot's happening right now. A lot is going on. A lot's happening. So a lot of people are just, so a lot of people are on edge. There's some people that have not lost their jobs. I mean, there are a lot of people that have lost their jobs. I'm saying, sorry. You know, a lot of people are stuck inside the house, and a lot of people are upset with police brutality, racism, things of that nature. And the last few weeks, a lot of my, you know, white brothers and sisters in Christ, I have to commend them for, have decided, man, I want to care about this issue. I want to care about Black people. I want to care about these things. And I do feel as if some people that were on the edge, that were like really close to trying to be like, okay, what do I do? What do I, you know, what can I do to help the Black community? There's some that were on the edge of that, or that are want to champion that. When they see a Facebook post like mine, they're like, nah, I'm out. I don't want to even care about helping Black people. Like, I mean, it's just too much. Like, they want so much. Like, I don't understand. This is too much for me. You guys always want to destroy things or take things down, or you guys are just, I just don't want to deal with that, right? And so I want to talk about that first. So I want to say first, that's something I'm struggling with right now. I'm struggling with, do I continue to code switch? Do I continue to speak my truth in a way that is palpable for people? I need to not even use that word, because I'm not saying that right. So should I continue to code switch and make people comfortable with the truth that I have to present, all right, or something that I want to get out? Do I want to continue to do that, right? Or should I just not care about that, right? Not care about the how people will receive it, but just speak, you know, how I feel about it. Because this is very interesting. This is what Donald Trump does, right? Donald Trump doesn't care about the people he offends. Donald Trump doesn't care about, he just says the way he feels. And if you feel upset about it, then forget it. Like, you ain't for him, da 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 da. And he says things that are, I don't know if it, sometimes some people believe it, he's purposely being inflammatory. And so there's that. Some people are telling me, Shelton, man, don't care about, you know, white feelings, right? Or, you know, white tears, you know, things of that nature. Why do you care so much about that? So I hear those people, right? Because they're like, man, Shelton, you just speak your truth, and whatever happens, happens. Forget, stop trying to sugarcoat things. Stop trying to do that type of stuff. Just speak how you feel, and the people that love you will love you. The people that don't, they'll leave, right? So those are the type of things that I'm hearing from people. And I'm trying to figure out, man, do I listen to these people or do I not? I mean, how would Jesus want to do? Because Jesus was calling people vipers and stuff. Like, Jesus was not, Jesus was speaking truth to people directly. And, you know, and so it's like, where do I fall and how does that look biblically? So I've been struggling with that, right? And I'm also been struggling with the fact that I have lost allies in the fight for helping the Black community, because people, when they see these things, it's so inflammatory. It's so to them, this is immediately divisive, what I'm saying. This is divisive, right? Even though the same people shared articles about this and they were like, this is stupid, this is dumb. But if they do that and they have, and they're on the other side of things, it's not divisive. But because I'm talking about it and I'm on another side, I'm divisive. So I'm like, pick of it. Like, I don't know what, you know, but maybe it's because it's not just the fact I'm on this side, but also because of the nature of how I say what I say, right? So I'm saying all of that to say, I've thought about this a lot, right? And maybe I'm overthinking a lot of this, but I've thought about it. So I think that one, if what I said makes you not want to care about Black lives, I'm like, dang, I feel bad for that, right? I feel bad that a post that I said or a post that has this feeling would make people say, man, I'm out. I don't even want to deal with helping Black people when it comes to police brutality or against the systemic issues that have been happening, you know, against Black people. So I get that. And there are going to be times, I want you, people that are listening right now, if you want to be an ally to the cause, this is something I want you to understand. I will not be perfect. Especially in these times where people are sharing how they feel. But people are sharing how they feel, like, boom, boom, this is how I feel. There's a lot of times over the last, I don't know, 15 years, you could say, where I've held things in because I just was like, I'll just do it later. And now I'm not holding them in anymore. And sometimes you're going to have to give me grace to be wrong because I'm not going to be perfect. So some of you guys who are allies who shared my episodes of this particular podcast, I want to let you know when I'm talking from frustration, when I'm talking from just being upset about the world, I need you to give me grace. I want you to think about this for a second. If someone for years, let's say a wife for years had been getting beat by her husband, and every time she held it in, every time she was like, man, I'm not going to deal with this. You know, every time she was like, she cried silently. Every time when she didn't mention it. But finally, she gets tired of getting beat and she tells her husband to stop. Or she tells her husband that he's being an idiot or he is. Or not just that she's saying stop, because stop isn't really just the issue. But the fact that she starts cussing her husband out. Now, am I going to be more upset over the fact she's cussing the husband out or the fact that homeboy's been dealing or she's been dealing with this for years, right? And I think sometimes, I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to respond correctly because of things that have happened to me when it comes to racism and also things that are continuing to happen now to Black people. There are going to be things that are going to come up, and sometimes I may not respond correctly. So I'm going to look at this Facebook post 5 years from now, and I'm probably going to look back and I'm going to probably cringe a little bit. And I'm like, man, there's probably a better way I could have said that. But I'm going to keep this up because I want people to understand that Black people, like, censoring the outrage of Black people is not helpful. Okay, so I want to just say that off rip, but let's deal with this. All right, let's deal with the subject at hand. And okay, so what I'm going to do now, I'm going to deal with the subject at hand, and then I'm going to deal with the comments that are in my comment section. All right, I got 94 comments in here. So I think that this is a great way to do a podcast episode. I love doing podcast episodes dealing with my life or what's going on currently. So let's deal with it. So let's deal with the subject. And I think I answered it in one of my comments, I think a little bit better. When it comes to this white Jesus and things being tore down, just things being destroyed and things, people tearing down statues and things of that nature, I think that, I think I heard someone say, okay, once you tear everything down, what's going to happen next? And I think this is something that I need to, and it's something I'm working myself through too, is understanding that if you look at, not everybody, but most people that founded this country, most people that were in the late 1700s, the early 1800s, you know, they were on 2020 standards, they were racist, right? Like, they wanted slavery. They wanted, oppression. They wanted some of these different things going on. They wanted women not to be able to vote. They wanted a lot of things, right? They wanted things that people today would say, man, that's blatantly racist. That's blatantly sexist. That's blatantly, you know, and you would find there's few and far between. It's sad to say that, but it's the truth of the matter. We need to, and I think that and this is something I'm working myself through. We need to, give people grace for the time that they lived in, right? And I know, this is how I feel right now, on June 24th, right now at, let me make sure that's right. Yeah, at 11:31 a.m. Central Time. This is how I feel right now, currently, is that if we start judging people in 1776 by the standards of 2020, I don't think that's a right way to handle things. I think that we need to start looking at judging people by the time that they were in. Okay, I think that'll be the most helpful thing, is to judge people by the timeline or the time that they were in. Like, I don't love it where, like what we're doing now, like Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, were just, you know, people were trying to cancel them because of them wearing blackface a few years ago, right? And people are saying they need to be fired, they need to be let go. I'm so sick of this, right? But what we're doing is we're judging those comedians on a 2020 standard, and that's not always the case. Like, that's not a good thing to do. Like, let me explain my case. Can you imagine, right, where, you know, years ago, the speed limit, let's say in 1994, the speed limit was 50 on the road, 50 miles an hour. Now the standard is 70 miles an hour, right? Are we going to sit back in, or maybe, you know, you sit back and you're like, you know what, let me go ahead. And actually, let's do it a reverse way. Let's reverse it. I'm sorry. Let's say back in the day, it was 70 miles an hour, right? And, or something. What I'm trying to say is this. Are we going to sit back in today's time and arrest people or give people a ticket for something they did in 1994 that wasn't a crime or wasn't a mistake then, but now it's a mistake now? And I think, and what I'm trying to say, I know that was like, I know the mixed up analogy, like, wait, Shelton, what are you saying? You're saying this, 70 miles, forget the 70 miles or 50 miles an hour. I messed that analogy up. But what I'm trying to say is, if we sit back and start going back and retroactively charging people for tickets that weren't a crime, you know, back then, that would be an issue or a problem. Like, bro, when I did this back in 1995, that wasn't an issue. But now in 2020, it is a problem. It is an issue. So those are the type of things that we have to start thinking about. Are we thinking like, wait, are we really gonna get upset about this kind of stuff? I think we got to be mindful of that. And also, we should, if we're going to retroactively be, especially when it comes to Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon and all these other comics that did things that were kind of questionable or whatever, that are questionable today, then what we are going to have to do is start being upset at ourselves, because many of us were alive when Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel did these things. But at that time, you weren't outraged about it. When Kevin Hart made those tweets, those tweets about gay people, you were alive, I were alive, I was alive, and guess what? We were not upset about that. Why? Because in that time, it was okay to make those particular jokes. Now, it's not okay. And I think that if we start judging everything by a 2020 standard, then we have an issue and a problem, okay? So that's kind of where I was thinking about this for a while. That's kind of where I stand on that. And then also, when it comes to symbols, all right, can we talk about it? Let's talk about the symbols and stuff. I think I'm done trying to get people to understand, or I'm done trying to get people to act as if, or put out things that you care about Black people, right? Instead of actually doing something that's going to help Black people, okay? And I'm going to explain this. I know that made no sense, so I'm going to try to explain it to you a little bit better. There's a time, I think in the last few years, I just wanted a lot of my white allies to say that Black lives matter, or Black lives do matter. And so the last month, I was sharing some things from pastors or from preachers, and I wanted, you know, to have white allies that could say Black lives matter. And that was like my thing. Like, I wanted you guys to understand it, to see it, to care about the issue, to do all those different things I said. And now, right? So after a few weeks of that, I begin to think, well, it's very easy for someone to say Black Lives Matter, right? But never do anything after that. There's no action that can that would show that Black lives do matter. So because of that, why do I care about these symbols of justice or these symbols of progress when I should be caring about actual progress? And this is the same thing I think about some of these, you know, statues and things of that nature. Okay, cool. Let's say we tear down every Confederate soldier, right? Let's say that we tear down the white Jesus. Is that going to help the wealth gap that's in America right now? Is that going to help that when it comes to Black people? No, it's not going to help that. Is it going to help? Is it going to help the criminal justice system where Black people are over-criminalized over the same crime as a white person? Is that going to help in our criminal justice system? No, it's not going to help that. Is it going to help our justice system when people can be a felon over a drug offense and they can no longer vote? A lot of jobs won't hire them all because of some drugs. Is that going to help that particular situation? Is this going to help Black people in any way, shape, or form tangibly? No. So, if that's the case, then what's the purpose of me even trying to convince people online that tearing down a statue of a white Jesus, why is that even important, right? And I think I'm getting to the point now is saying, okay, Black Lives Matter, too divisive for some people, especially people on the right. They want to sit back and label it Marxist, or they want to sit back and say, oh, I can't support that because of this particular movement. I can't support that because X, Y, and Z. All right, cool. So do I want them to care about Black lives? Yes. Then I have to be mindful that trying to get them to care about the symbol of change is stupid. I need to start convincing people to have tangible ways to help Black people. And those tangible ways are not going to be tearing down a statue. It's not going to be about trying to tell people that Black lives matter. It's not going to be about those things. So I think at first, what I need to do is, and even something as stupid as the N-word, right? Trying to get people to understand the significance of it, or understand why, you know, a white person shouldn't say it, whatever. I think all of these arguments, right? An argument about Black Lives Matter, the saying, okay, an argument about statues being teared down, an argument about saying the N-word. I think all of these arguments are stupid in comparison to what we should be fighting for. Now, what I will say is I don't feel bad forever fighting alongside or fighting against. Let me just say that. I will never feel bad about fighting against oppressive symbols because, and maybe some of you don't understand this, but white Jesus in America has been used to oppress Black people. When it comes to slavery, when it comes to segregation, when it comes to Jim Crow laws, when it comes to so many different things, people allowed the color of Jesus to oppress people. Now, I understand that you could sit back and say, man, every ethnicity has a color of a Jesus. Okay, so why does it even matter? Well, I don't know about an African Jesus that oppressed other minorities. If it is, show me and I will gladly retract the statement. Show me where a Chinese Jesus ever oppressed or was used to oppress other minorities or other people groups. So it's not the color. And I think so many people are so fact, okay, the color, oh man, it's about the color. Da-da-da. It's not about the color, guys. It's about an oppressive symbol that was used for years to hurt Black people. So that's why I don't care for it. Okay, I don't care for it. If I see YGs, I'm like, whatever. Because I know that that was used as a symbol by so many. Okay? And this is something that I want some of you guys to understand. I want you guys to Google. One of these days, I want you guys to Google, right? Many of you who are my white brothers and sisters in Christ would tell me that you find the KKK despicable. You find them terrible. You find them horrible. You find them like the things that they did to Black people. A lot of you would sit back and say, you know, it's horrible, right? Now, what I want you to, even though you say that they're horrible, I want you one day to Google the KKK beliefs. The things that the KKK believes. And the reason why I want you to is because when you start reading what they believe, a lot of you will sit back and say, well, you know what? I agree with that too. And you're going to have to wrestle with, I can't always teach you some of these things. Some of these things you're going to have to learn on your own, but you're going to have to wrestle with the fact that many of your beliefs might be a little bit oppressive, and you use the Bible to teach it. You actually use the Bible to oppress people and you don't even realize it. So what I would recommend you do, go Google the things that that the KKK believes, especially biblically. And you'll sit back and some of you will sit back and say, well, I believe that, or I used to believe some of this, and those are the type of things that I am upset that my faith has been used to oppress people groups. And that's what I've been upset with. And guess what? I'm never going to be sad or apologize over the fact that that's who I am. I've been the person that have been on the side of women where many people in the denomination I grew up in and things of that nature did not care about women. And what's even crazier is because women were so conditioned in the denomination I was in, that even they did not love themselves, to be real, because they were so conditioned to believe some of the garbage that came from that denomination, where women are second-class citizens sometimes, you know, are second-class people in these churches, okay? And so I've stood alongside of that all the time. I've always been the person that stands alongside people groups when I feel like it's not right. I stood on the side of Mexicans. I stood on the side of the people in the LGBTQ who I feel are being mistreated by people who claim to be Christians. So that's the person that I've always been. And so, of course, I'm going to stand alongside African Americans, alongside Black people in this country. I will. To the day I die, I will, and I will always stand alongside of it. And so oppressive symbols, I do, hey, tear them all down. And to be honest, some of you sit back and say, well, it's not just the fact that they're white. You know, if you tear down, if your people are saying to tear down African Jesus, I would do the same thing. I would be upset. Listen, bro, you can tear them all down. I don't care. You can tear every symbol, every statue of Jesus down. I don't care because, one, I do not worship a statue of Jesus. That's number one. I don't do that. So I don't know where some of y'all do that, but I don't do that. I don't worship. You can tear them all down. I don't care. That's number one. All right. Number two, I'm always going to stand alongside, you know, people who are being oppressed. That's just it. Boom. Point blank, period. All right. So, all right. I told y'all that. So now y'all should get that. That should be, you can understand a little bit more of my stance on the issue. But let's go through these comments, bro. Ain't this what y'all? Y'all want to see these comments, bro. That's what y'all want. Y'all want to hear about these comments, what people had to say. So let's go through these 94 comments, man. Let's go through some of them. Okay, so person said, aren't statues inherently white due to their material, stone, plaster, etc.? I have a couple statues of some of my favorite Greek heroes/generals, except Greeks aren't white per se. But all the statues are white because they're made out of marble or plaster. What color would you prefer Jesus' statues be? So here's the thing. Very, very interesting. This is very, I find this laughable, but I do understand. I can't laugh at everything. Like, this is something that I've had to learn, right? Is there was one of my other friends, he posted something that I was like, whoa. And I laughed at it. And I have to sit back and say, okay, I should not be laughing. This, some people really have questions on this stuff. Like, what should I honestly do? Like, what's going on? So I did comment and I said, it's not just about color, but the fact that, you know, someone has European, that these statues are with European features, right? Someone laughed at that comment. I said, oh, you guys don't understand even that. So I deleted that comment. I said, you know what? Let me delete that because y'all don't understand that, right? So then I went and I shared a marble photo or a statue of Martin Luther King Jr., who's all white. Like, he's the color is white, but the features are not European, right? So then it's like, oh, okay, cool, I got it. All right, fine. Like, then they got that. But then, you know, people still are like, nah, man, what would it look like? Like, what would a statue that, you know, whatever. And I think a lot of times people are stuck on the statue thing. It's not just really about the statues, but there's so many different imagery about Jesus being white that many of us need to probably destroy. But you know what? Like I said, I don't care. Y'all can do what you want. Y'all can keep it. That's the same. This same thing about the Confederate flag thing. Let me just jump this in here too, right? Y'all can go ahead and have a Confederate flag in your house. Do it. If you want to do it so bad, do it. If you care about, it's my heritage, don't you take the Confederate flag from me, go ahead and do it. Just know I'm not coming to your house. Just know that, okay? Because most of the time, I just don't, I got to code switch a little bit. So let me not be honest. Let me not be authentic. Let me just say it like this. A lot of Black people, when they see the Confederate flag, they see it as a sign of oppression, okay? Now, many of you guys, one, don't care about that. Y'all don't care about how Black people feel, which is okay. You don't have to. You don't have to care that Black people feel that way. That is fine, actually. You actually can do whatever you like. I mean, it doesn't really matter to me. It don't really matter to me at all, you know what I mean? So do you. But just know that based upon you having a Confederate flag, most unlikely we're not going to be best friends. We're just not going to be, okay? Because you don't care about Black people's feelings. It is what it is. So, get that out the way. And then let me read another comment, see if there's anything cool here. Person says, I think it's not so much that it's a white Jesus. I've seen things people have posted that they're upset about white Jesus, that type of thing. But, you know, about white Jesus being torn down. Okay, let me not get in there. Most people I'm seeing are confused are not tearing Jesus down. Most people I'm seeing are confused on not tearing Jesus down, not his whiteness. To be fair, some of those same people would probably be upset to see a Black Jesus. I don't care either way. Leave the old ones alone if everything else about them is appropriate and make any new depictions more accurate. So he's saying, and this person's saying, hey, how about we just leave the old ones up and just create some new ones with new depictions? You know, that's what his argument is. How about we just do that, right? But let me just say this 100%, 110%. All right. I don't care. I'm going to say this. This is, most of us didn't even know. I'm going to be honest. I don't even know that there was, I can't even tell you where statues of white Jesus are. Okay? I can't tell you. I can't tell you what they are. And this is what I really think, right? I think when these arguments come up about the Confederate flag or about the statues or about, you know, statues of the Confederate, you know, soldiers or the statue of this white Jesus thing, I think some of this is just a distraction. I really do. And this is the only time I'm ever going to have a conspiracy where my conspiracy hat on, right? It's the only time you'll ever see me put it on, because I'm not this conspiracy theorist type of person, right? But what I find very interesting is I found out that 70, let's see here, 10% of Americans, 10% of Americans, I'm going to say this and then I'll bring it back to this. 10% of Americans own 70% of the wealth in this country. So I want you to think about this. 10% of Americans, I'm going to say it again, so it sinks in, 10% of Americans have 70% of the wealth in this country. 70%. So that means that that means that 90% of Americans, very high percentage, 90% of Americans are fighting over that 30%. And what's crazy about that is most of us don't care about that. We care more about statues being torn down, about if someone says Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, whatever, than we do about the wealth inequities in this country, which I find fascinating. And I think that the elites, you know, I'm going to go sit back and say, the elites want us to, the elites understand that we can't get on the same page when it comes to race. So what they do is they allow talking points, you know, like, you know, the Confederate flag, the soldiers, this white Jesus statue thing. They allow this to be news just so that we can be distracted over the fact that they own 70% of the wealth in this country. And I think if I remember, wow, man, one of my friends even told me this, that the 1% owns even way more than that, or something else beyond, like, it was astronomical, but I don't feel like looking it up right now. But just to say, like, the elites really don't care about any of these issues because it doesn't impact them. And so I think a lot of us, if we would just sit back and care more about the wealth, you know, inequality, and sit back and say, man, I don't care about these statue stuff. I don't care about, you know, some of this ridiculous stuff, but let's talk about actually helping most Americans, are helping the 90% of Americans. Because what's so funny is the elites want us caring about welfare, saying, oh man, the poor are taking so much out of your taxes. To be honest, the wealthy are the ones that are ripping us off, but yet we care so much about the poor, because 90% of Americans have to fight over 30% of the wealth. I'm just saying, it makes me think that the elites are sitting back and laughing. They're like, oh my soul, we got them caring about this white Jesus statue being torn down. So I'm like, you know, but, you know, needless to say, let's see is there any cool things in here. Oh man, I think I saw something really interesting, right? Oh, I think I already mentioned this. No statue of Jesus should come down. I don't care if he's depicted as white, Jewish, black, or Chinese, because where will it stop? I think what's interesting, too, it's very, 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 very interesting, is a lot of people are upset that too much things are changing in their lifetime. Like, I think sometimes when it comes to progress, a lot of times people want it slow. They want it to be kind of like, you know, the frog that's cooked in the stove. You know, like, you know the illustration about the frog? Because if you put a frog in hot water, he's gonna, you know, hop out. But if you slowly boil the frog, you know, he'll be able to die, whatever. So anyways, I think a lot of people, they want it to be kind of a slow thing, a slow buildup of some of these things, because I think America is changing too quick and too fast. I think that was that's one of the reasons I think that, you know, Americans wanted a change from Barack Obama to Donald Trump, is because the America that they knew was slowly getting changed too quickly for them. Slowly getting changed to, you know, their ideals being removed. And I think sometimes it's just too much progress, too much change, going on in their life, you know, and it's like, where was this going to stop? We're going to tear down Jesus. Oh, no, we shouldn't tear down Jesus. But honestly, none of us even knew where some of these Jesus statues are. And to be honest, there's no one, some of us, man, we don't even really care about that stuff, bro. To be honest, I don't even care. I don't really care. I just was surprised over the fact that people cared so much about, don't you tear down my white Jesus. I was just, I don't care about this, bro. I don't really care about none of this, bro. I don't really care. I care more about trying to actually have tangible change for Black people. I don't care about some of this stuff, bro. This stuff is crazy, bro. This stuff is crazy. Cassie, sorry. I didn't want to say names. Dang. Let me not even say her comment now, because dang, I didn't want to say someone's names. Let's see. This person said this. It's very interesting, though. Very, very interesting. This person said, facts is Jesus was a Jew. That's probably the real reason it's coming down. Okay, let's talk about this. There are many people, and I, and if you do like a little simple study on this, right, there are some people that actually believe in white Jesus or perpetuated this belief of white Jesus because they were anti-Semitic. So a lot of people, because they don't like, you know, the Jews, were really putting out this white Jesus thing because they did not like the fact, you know, they don't like the Jews and things of that nature. There is actually some people who claim to be Christians was why they kept this white Jesus thing going on. So I find that interesting. So I just find that very interesting that's kind of why white Jesus was even there in some circles of Christianity, is because they wanted to whitewash the Jews kind of out of their existence. You can kind of look that up, you can Google it, you know, whatever. Search that yourself. But that's very interesting that someone says, so he's saying that because Jesus was a Jew is why we're taking it down. Wow, that's a wild statement. That is a very wild statement. But whatever, cool to, I mean, that's what homeboy believes. That's interesting. He said that's probably the real reason it's coming down, or because he's God. Huh. So people really think this is an attack on their faith. This is where it's very interesting, right? This is why I started to say that. This is why I made the post about, you know, once you start destroying the white supremacy in American Christianity, people look at it like, dang, you are attacking my faith, right? Like, my faith is rooted in white Jesus, you know? And I don't think this is what this homeboy is saying, but it's like, if we start really dismantling some of the things that America has built, like, or, you know, are built on, like, especially in our faith, there are a lot of things in American Christianity that's just 100% not biblical, just not right, just not correct. Like, that's why I'm for biblical Christianity, not for this American Christianity, because a lot of this American Christianity is just so, like, you know, and actually, to talk about that, yeah, let's actually talk about, I saw there was somebody who, let me see something. Someone made a mention of this on my, here it is. And I want to talk about this. This person said, who are you to say American Christianity is not biblical? With exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, question mark, question mark. Who are you to say American Christianity is not biblical? Who are you who died and made you the king of American Christianity? Who are you? The broadness of that statement makes it completely inaccurate, reckless, and inappropriate. Unless that's what you're going for. Shock value. If your end game is to encourage believers to be more like Christ by the shocks and awe tackling, in all tactics, I cannot talk today. It's having the opposite effect. I stopped worshiping statues when I was born again. To me, they are a simple reminder of the existence of Christ. They have no magical power. They don't give off spiritual woo-doo. If someone worships them, regardless of what color the idol is, it's idolatry. If someone doesn't worship them, but is spurned on to be more like the Christ of the Bible, an olive-skinned, dark-haired, dark-eyed, Mediterranean type, well, more power to them. Who are you? All right. I'm sorry. I had too much fun with that. And then my accent just started going crazy. I didn't feel like doing the who are you. It's just my voice just starting to act a little crazy. But anyway, who am I? I ain't nobody. I ain't nobody. To be honest with you, bro, I'm just a nobody trying to tell everybody about somebody who can save anybody. Listen, I'm a nobody, all right? So, I don't know. Sometimes I find some of this stuff funny to me. But anyways, who am I, right? Who am I to say? To be honest, I'm not anyone, but biblical Christianity is not American Christianity, okay? Like, the reason why I say that, and maybe, you know, this person just hasn't done enough study, this person doesn't understand. And I think a lot of times when you're a Black person and you're talking about, sometimes when you're Black, you're not going to be believed, man. I think being Black and being a woman, like, you're just not going to believe. Like, being Black, you're not going to be believed that racism has happened to you. There's going to be some people that are like, nah, bro, when did racism happen to you, Shelton? Come on. I mean, you're our token Black person. We love you, you know. We loved you. We don't love you anymore. You know, you are token. We rooted for you, okay? And now you are not for us anymore. Let me stop. Anyways, I might delete some of this. But anyways, I'm not anyone to say that American about to talk up really, you know, about, you know, anything. But when American Christianity was, you know, for, you know, when American Christianity has sexist beliefs, when American Christianity, was racist. I mean, they used the Bible to oppress Black people, to get them, you know, you need to obey your masters, you know, things of that nature were taught to slaves to get them to not rebel, to not stand up, to not, you know, to not be angry over the chains that were, you know, was on them. And so it is true that there were people that used the Bible to oppress and took verses out of context to do it. There were people, I mean, all throughout American history, you know, there were segregational beliefs that permitted themselves into American Christianity. I had someone very recently, I want to say 2011, somewhere around there, where someone was in my inbox and letting me know that interracial marriages were wrong, and he was giving me biblical context for that. That when I hear things like that, I'm like, okay, this is why I say American Christianity is not biblical. When I hear things of that nature talking about, especially when you look at how American Christianity handle race in the mainstream. See, this is what you have to understand, is that mainstream American Christianity, for the most part, has always been racist. And guess what? They still are a little bit. But it's okay. Like, I mean, no, actually, it's not okay. I'm not even going to try to appease some of you. It's not fine that this stuff happens. And I think this is why a lot of us are trying to figure this stuff out, man. Like, the reason why I say American Christianity is not biblical is because the most segregated hour of the day is 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Like, that's still, I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. said that, but that's still true today. Like, I don't understand, like, and maybe this person has not done a study on American Christianity, or maybe sometimes when you're in it, you don't see it. Like, this is like a let's say that, you know, you have a parent has three different kids. Let's say my parents, they had three kids, right? So me, my brother, and my sister. If you ask all of us about our relationship with our dad, all of us would have different experiences with him. But me saying, but me sitting back and saying, just because, for example, let's say that my brother was like, my dad's, you know, dad's the worst. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Dad's the best, because dad gave me all this stuff. And I neglected the fact that of what dad did to my brother. Is it saying that my truth is wrong or his truth is wrong? No, it's just saying that my experiences, you know, with X, Y, and Z has been wrong. Actually, that's really a bad example, because American Christianity isn't even about experience. It's about reality of a situation. So like, literally, you know, we have Christian colleges who didn't want, you know, Black people to be in the same building, or Black man to be in the same building as a white woman. That's American Christianity. Like, I don't understand, you know, and that's why when I say American Christianity is not biblical, that's what I'm talking about. You know, there's so much that I can go into that statement with, especially when you're talking about race, where like it was acceptable, you know, in the circles to treat Black people less than. In some groups, it's still acceptable today. So I don't know. And maybe, you know, this person just doesn't know some of these things. And maybe they'll sit back and say, yeah, I know this, but I don't attribute that to American Christianity. Maybe that's the case, you know. But also, American Christianity is more patriotic than they are Christian. And that's an issue. And I heard a quote one time where someone said, to be a good Christian is sometimes to be a bad American. And I know for some people, that's hard to wrap their mind around. Like, for some of you guys, it'll be surprising to you that there won't be an American flag in heaven. The reason why I say American Christianity is not biblical is because many of us, we take verses out of context. Just recently, Mike Pence went up to a podium and he began to use this verse that many of you guys use. And you say, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, you know, and, you know, will humble themselves and pray and turn from the wicked ways, repent, turn from the wicked ways. And then God will say, you know, we know the verse, right? And I'm sorry, I was looking at something, so I threw my mind off. But essentially, Mike Pence used that verse. And you're like, well, what's the problem with him using that verse? If you don't know the problem with him using that verse, then you're stuck with American Christianity. Many of us, American Christianity has replaced Israel. A lot of times they've used theology to replace Israel with America. So when we hear the verse, if my people are called by my name, humble themselves and pray, and, you know, and turn from the wicked ways, then, you know, so we use that verse for America, when in context, what is that verse? The verse God is talking to Israel, because America is not Israel. America is not the, oh man, Israel is not the, 20th century Israel, 21st century Israel, you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of us, we're sitting back and we're using verses that were written to Israel and replacing it with America. And yet you are telling me that you don't understand my statement that American Christianity is not biblical. And I don't know, and maybe I'm confused by some of this, maybe, you know, you know, maybe, cool. But I will say this, I have to make the statements that I say comfortable to a predominantly white Facebook friendship group. And where he says that my statement's broad, it's inaccurate, reckless, and inappropriate, or that my Facebook status was for shock value, that's not necessarily the case. But I have to say this. This is what I have to say. Is I have to word what I want to say better. And two, I think that this is a stupid thing to argue about, because none of this is going to help Black people tangibly. Okay? And so this is something I should have went to that angle of it. One, I was just generally surprised that people care about white Jesus statues. But then some of you guys are saying, it's not just about white Jesus. It could have been any color Jesus. I just don't want to tear down. You're tearing down my faith. Don't tear down my faith. But anyway, I don't care about this stuff. I don't care about none of these statues. I don't care about none of that, bro. And this person said, would you tear them down or replace it with an accurate statue? I mean, if you have more accurate statue of Jesus, cool. But honestly, I don't care about any of these statues. And so here. All right, so cool. So we got this. What else did someone said? Let's see if there's anything else cool. Yeah, I don't listen to Vadi Bachman. It's too much stuff to disagree with him on. Someone sent me a video of him. Disagree with so much him. He's the new Martin Luther King Jr. Okay. I'm sorry. He's not the new Martin Luther King Jr. in theology or in talking points. But what I mean is that he's someone that people take and use against Black people. He's being used as a weapon against Black people too often. But I do think that Vadi Bachman is a good person. I just disagree with him wholeheartedly on a lot of issues, especially his take on race. I just find it, I don't like it at all. Anyway, okay, cool. Spurs said, pretty offended you contribute American Christianity to racism. You're laboring the small as the whole. Any racism toward anyone is not Christian, and you blanketed many of God's beloved in that statement. This is what's wrong with the world. Call sin what it is and stop trying to appease the masses by labeling. Okay, so then someone did stick up for me and said, Shelton did say American Christianity as opposed to the biblical kind. In America, and then he starts breaking it down, there's a difference between American and biblical. But I do know that for some people, they don't understand that. And that's why I think that I wasn't purposely trying to be offensive, but people just honestly are just so, they just haven't done any study. Like there's about 10 people who always comment when I talk about race. And essentially what I want to tell you guys, there's a few of you guys that comment whenever I talk about race. It's about 10 of you guys, some of you guys, some of you girls, mostly men. But there's a few of you ladies too that like to comment on my topics about race. So cool. Let me just say this. Let me talk to you guys specifically. Okay. Whenever I talk about race or anything, any issue. So let me break this down. Let me talk to you guys directly. All right. For many of you, okay, who comment on my Facebook posts or who always have something to say when it comes to race, okay? I don't want you to feel like I'm attacking you, okay? I'm attacking racism, and I'm attacking things that go on in churches, in America, you know, in our justice system, in our healthcare system, in our, you know, just wherever you want to, in policing. And there's so much that I can dive into. And me bringing this up is a little crazy, but let me talk to you guys directly. Talk to you. One, I'm not attacking you when I bring up race. And some of you guys feel attacked. Personally attacked. One, I'm not attacking you. Okay. Two, some of us, and I have to be honest with you guys, you do not care about Black people. You might care about Black individuals. There might be Black individuals. You're like, man, I care about this Black individual, but you don't care about Black people. All of us at a whole. Okay. And so we get that. And I think for some of you guys, I'm going to start deleting your comments, not because I don't want to hear truth from the right, but because I know where you stand. There's 10 of you guys. There's about 10 of you guys who, this is what I think would be so helpful if you just sit back and say, I don't care about Black people. Just say that. Like, I would actually find that way more I would actually prefer that because I like people that stand for what they believe. I love that. I love for people that are like, this is what I believe. I don't care about Black people. I would actually like that more. That would actually mean so much more if you just sit back and say, I don't want to do anything for Black people. I don't want to do anything for them. I don't want to stand up for them. That would actually be better because, like, me, on the other hand, I'm trying to figure out ways to help the Black community. For some of you guys, right, I always want to know, like, you guys are come to me and you say, like, oh, the violent rate in the Black community is too high. Why don't you talk about this, Shelton? Or you caring about this police reform? Or, you know, or you sit back and say, you know, if I say Black Lives Matter, you say All Lives Matter, you say Blue Lives Matter, you share a post where a police officer gets shot and says his life mattered. Okay. Oh, my soul. It's too much. It's too much to dive into. It's too much to dive into every day. But let me talk to you about this, all these things directly. Okay, cool. All right. For some of you guys, one, saying Black Lives Matter, I'm saying that Black lives are being treated differently in this country. And society has not shown them that their life matters. So I'm saying that they matter. I'm saying my life matters. I'm saying that my baby girl who's going to be born, Melena, her life matters. And I'm going to fight for the next generation, because I want the next generation of society to show her that her life matters. Okay? So I want it to be shown in the justice system that Black lives matter. I want to be shown in the criminal justice system that Black lives matter. I want the war on drugs to end, because the war on drugs has been used to over-police minority communities. I want that to end, okay? I want, I think black mothers and maternity, and it's more likely for a Black mother to die due to in childbirth than it is for a white person. I think it's 3 times as likely. So I care about that. I care about the healthcare system. I care about Black lives that are getting killed by abortion. I do care about that. I care about the gang violence that happens in Chicago, Detroit, and some of these other places. I care about that too. But I want you to understand, when you're talking about violence, when a Black person kills another Black person, that Black person goes to jail. I don't know how many times I have to say this. I got to say it so many different ways for many of you, okay? When any person kills a police officer, that person either is going to jail or the police are going to kill them on the street. So some form of justice will happen. Saying Black lives matter is not saying that white lives don't matter. Saying Black lives matter is not saying that police officers' lives don't matter. Saying Black lives matter is not hurting any of these things. It's just saying that a society has treated Black lives as if they do not matter. Okay? So when I care about police brutality, but police brutality is not the only form of disproportionately that Black people are being treated, right? So it's not just, I don't only care about police brutality when it comes to racism. And I think some of you times that's what some of you guys think. Racism is only in police, or Black people think racism only in police brutality. There's racism all across the board, guys. And what I'm gonna do is I'm hopefully going to, at the end of this podcast episode, I'm going to put audio of the guy who was in the VeggieTales, what's his name? Phil Vischer, as he does an in-depth analysis about racism and race-related problems in America. And maybe if you heard it from a white person, it would be better and more easier for you to digest than for me to say it. Okay, and I'm sorry. And I'm sorry that there are times I'm just a little bit more harsh because I don't code switch all the time. Sometimes on my Facebook, I don't code switch. All right? Just being honest, I don't do that. All right? So anyways, let's go back to what I'm saying. So for some of you guys, just be honest. You don't care about Black lives. You do not want to mentor Black people. You do not want to care to help the wealth gap that's in America. You don't care to help with that. You're not bringing up gang violence because you have any type of a solution. You just want to use it to shut Black people up about police brutality. Because the only times you ever bring up police, the only time right now during this racial divide, a lot of you guys are sharing posts about, oh man, this happened over Father's Day weekend and these people. So I'm like, what, really, guys? Really, guys, really? So what are you going to do? Because if you, there's so many issues when it comes to the Black community that Black people have. And instead of sprouting out statistics and stats, what are you going to do to help? Are you going to mentor? Are you going to be a mentor to the in the Black community? Are you going to do that? Some of you guys are great when it comes to financing and economics, things of that nature. Are you going to help people with that? Are you going to help Black people get jobs, but not just have jobs, but have good jobs? Are you going to help them with a career to success? Are some of you guys going to help Black people have home ownership? Are you guys going to help? See, these, for many of us, you guys see this as a Black problem. I see it as an American problem. So if you are an American, actually not even American problem, scratch it. I see it as a human problem. So if you are a Christian that wants to care about your neighbor, how about you help me and help other people that are trying to find solutions to help the Black community? How about you guys help, try to figure out a way to help our churches to come together in these times? That's what I want you guys to care about. I just want you guys to care. And some of you guys just purposely, man, every time I talk about race on my Facebook or on my social media or on my podcast, you continually tell me, I don't care about Black people. And you know what? And it's starting to get to a point now. I'm just going to delete your comments, number one. And number two, I'm not going to try to help or educate anymore. Because I think I'm at the point now where I'm not going to educate anyone anymore. Because it's getting to the point where I'm understanding is that you're coming from a point of view where you're literally saying, I don't care about Black people. So those 10 people, maybe even more than that, 10 to 15 people, who when you comment on my Facebook or message me and ask me questions, I'm going to legitimately not respond to you in my DMs. I'm going to delete your comments on my Facebook. That's honestly all that I can do at this point. So, yeah, I think that's good on that. And I could talk about some of this other stuff that some people said, but to be honest with you, man, I don't really care about these statues. I care about tangible ways to help Black people. And to be honest, man, even though I want all of the white Jesus statues to be torn down because they were used as symbols of oppression, that's all I can do. At this point, that's all I can do. And I just don't know what to say or what to do about this stuff anymore. But at this point, I'm just going to delete all of this stuff. And this is just how I'm going to do from now on. Is some of you guys, I'm going to be honest, I'm just not going to respond. And I'm not going to teach. I'm not going to try to help. And I'm just going to sit back and you guys, and what many of you guys can do is instead of understanding or instead of allowing Fox News or some of these other right-wing people to explain my opinion or explain other Black people, how other Black people feel, I need you to read a book, do your own Google searches about why someone believes a certain thing. Instead of calling someone stupid, instead of all these different things that we love to do all day long, how about we fight to understand some people? Because I think that makes that would be helpful. Be like, man, I wonder why this person believes this. I wonder why when it comes to race, this person goes this way. Because don't be trying to educate a Black person about race, especially in America. Don't do that. And don't use one of these Fox surrogates to and send them in my DMs or send me any more Vadi Bachman video. I don't care. I don't want to see them. All right. Figure out why Black people feel some type of way about things, man. And figure it out for yourself. You, your own Googles, because I think at this point, I am tired of educating. So, and to all my people, my people that don't look like me, who want to help but don't know how, I'm here for you. Still. You curiously want to help. You curiously want to figure this stuff out. And it's not going to figure itself out if we hide in our echo chambers. We have to allow these ideas out in the forefront. We have to figure out each other, understand each other. So anyways, there's so many ways that we can do solutions in this country that I have ideas for. But maybe, you know, maybe I'll talk about that at a different time. I just wanted to kind of get this out. But anyways, if I'm going to go ahead and right now, I'm going to go ahead and put in that clip of Phil Vischer. And hopefully you guys can understand maybe what he's saying even better than what I'm saying at this point.
We need to talk about race. Why are people protesting? Why are people angry? Slavery ended 150 years ago. The civil rights movement was 60 years ago. Racial discrimination is illegal now. Heck, we even had a Black president. So why are people still upset? We're going to go through history and we're going to look at some data. And we're going to go quickly so this video doesn't get too long. So, hang on. These are two households in America. One is Black, the other is white. Today, the average Black household has 60% of the income of the average white household, but only 1/10 of the household wealth. Why does that matter? Well, household wealth helps send kids to school, helps launch small businesses, stabilizes loss of income, and helps families survive catastrophic events like divorce or unemployment. What's amazing about this number is that there are lots of extremely wealthy African Americans, movie stars, pop stars, 75% of the NBA, 70% of the NFL, Oprah, Tyler Perry, Ben Carson, Morgan Freeman, and there are a lot of extremely poor white families. Think of Appalachia and other parts of rural America. But even when we factor all that in, the average Black household still has only 1/10 the wealth of the average white household. How did that happen? Well, here we go. What happened after we freed the slaves, after the Civil War ended? 9 states enacted vagrancy laws, making it a crime to not have a job. The law was applied only to Black men. 8 of those states then allowed prisoners, the Black men who'd just been arrested for not having a job, to be hired out to plantation owners with little or no pay going to the prisoners themselves. So, that's right, men who had been freed from the plantations found themselves right back on the plantations. Additional laws prohibited mischief and insulting gestures, which allowed more Black men to be arrested and created a huge market for convict leasing. Working conditions for these leased convicts could be worse than slavery, because the plantation owner leasing the Black prisoner had no long-term interest in his well-being. By the turn of the 20th century, every state in the South had mandated racial segregation by law, Jim Crow laws, which supported a social ostracism for Blacks that extended to schools, churches, housing, jobs, restrooms, hotels and restaurants, hospitals, prisons, funeral homes, morgues, and cemeteries. White politicians competed with each other to be more strict and specific on segregation. For example, a law prohibiting Blacks and whites from playing chess together. No interracial chess playing. That might lead to lawn darts. In 1896, the Supreme Court ruled that these Jim Crow laws were perfectly legal because they, quote, reflected customs and traditions and, quote, preserved public peace and good order. These laws stayed in place until 1954, when the idea of separate but equal was struck down in the ruling known as Brown versus Board of Education. So what happened next after Brown? Well, in 1956, the Southern Manifesto was signed by 101 out of 128 Congress members from the South, pledging to maintain Jim Crow by all means possible. Five states passed nearly 50 new Jim Crow laws after 1954. Private whites-only schools, dubbed segregation academies, popped up all across the South, many of them Christian. But now widespread civil rights protests, combined with anti-war protests that were occasionally becoming violent, inspired the political rise of law and order rhetoric. Richard Nixon became the first candidate to campaign specifically on a platform of law and order. In 1968, 81% of Americans agreed that law and order had broken down in this country, and the majority blamed communists and Negroes who start riots. Let's go back to household wealth. The average black household has 1/10 the wealth of the average white household. Why is that? Because the number one source of intergenerational wealth in America is home ownership. And from the 1930s to well into the 1960s, the federal government enacted policies to actively encourage white families to own homes and discourage black families from doing the same. In 1934, the Federal Housing Administration created a risk rating system to determine which neighborhoods were safe investment for federally backed mortgages. Black neighborhoods were deemed too risky, marked off in maps with red ink, in a practice now known as redlining. After World War II, a boom of new suburban housing was built all over the country, much of it restricted by deed to whites only. In 1948, 40% of new housing developments in Minneapolis, for example, had covenants prohibiting purchase by African Americans. So blacks couldn't live in white neighborhoods and couldn't get federally insured loans for black neighborhoods. Until 1950, the Realtors' Code of Ethics specifically prohibited selling a house in a white neighborhood to a non-white family. You could lose your realtor's license if you helped a black family buy a home in a white neighborhood. In the 1930s, the FHA's underwriting manual said, quote, incompatible racial groups should not be permitted to live in the same communities. The FHA went on to recommend that highways would be a great way to separate black neighborhoods from white neighborhoods. The FHA funded huge white-only suburban housing developments, leaving blacks behind in inner cities. After World War II, the GI Bill provided subsidized mortgages to help millions of men returning from war to buy their first home. While technically eligible for the GI Bill, the way it was administered left 1 million black veterans largely on the outside looking in. In New York and New Jersey, the GI Bill insured more than 67,000 new mortgages. Fewer than 100 of those went for homes purchased by non-whites. In 1947, there were 3,200 mortgages in Mississippi guaranteed by the government for returning veterans. Of the 3,200, only 2 went to black veterans. As a result, white families after the war were able to build home equity, growing wealth for retirement, inheritance, and college education for their kids. One historian has stated that there was no greater instrument for widening an already huge racial gap in post-war America than the GI Bill. And then came the war on drugs. Inner-city blacks were extremely vulnerable economically. The overwhelming majority of African Americans in 1970 lacked college degrees and had grown up in fully segregated schools. In the second half of the 20th century, factories and manufacturing jobs moved to the suburbs. Black workers struggled to follow the jobs. They couldn't live in many of the new suburban developments. And as late as 1970, only 28% of black fathers had access to a car. When a white man in Cicero, Illinois, just outside Chicago, sublet an apartment to a black family, the white community rioted, setting fire to the apartment building and smashing windows until the National Guard had to intervene. The result of all of this. In 1970, 70% of African American men had good blue-collar jobs. By 1987, only 28% did. As unemployment skyrocketed in African American communities, so did drug use. As drug use increased, so did crime. A dynamic today that we see playing out in white rural communities hit hard by unemployment and opioid addiction. Throughout the 1970s, white America became increasingly concerned by images of black violence shown on TV and in magazines. Drugs were the problem. Drug dealers and drug users were the enemy. So we decided to treat the drug epidemic not as a health crisis, but as a crisis of criminality, and we militarized our response. During the Reagan-Bush years from 1981 to 1991, how we invested money in anti-drug allocation completely changed. The anti-drug budget for the Department of Defense went from $33 million in 1981 to more than $1 billion in 1991. The Drug Enforcement Agency's budget to fight criminality and drug use went from $86 million to more than $1 billion. Then we came to the 1986 Anti-Drug Abuse Act, which carried mandatory minimum sentences, much harsher for the distribution of crack cocaine, which was associated with blacks, than powder cocaine, which was associated with whites. Mandated evictions from public housing for any tenant who permitted drug-related criminal activity to occur on or near premises. It eliminated many government benefits, including student loans, for anyone convicted of a drug crime. The 1988 revision set a 5-year minimum sentence for possessing any amount of crack cocaine, even if there was no intent to distribute. Previously, it had been a 1-year maximum sentence for possessing any amount of any drug without the intent to distribute. Now, it might seem like we're picking on Republicans, so now it's time to pick on some Democrats. During the Clinton presidency, the funding for public housing was cut by $17 billion. At the same time, the funding for prisons increased by $19 billion. The number of Americans imprisoned for drug crimes exploded. In 1980, there were 41,000 Americans imprisoned for drug crimes. Today, there are more than 500,000, more than the entire 1980 prison population. Most arrests are for possession. In 2005, 80% of the arrests were for possessing drugs, not selling drugs. In a bizarre twist, we also militarized our police forces. Between 1997 and 1999, the Pentagon handled 3.4 million orders for military equipment from more than 11,000 police agencies, including 253 aircraft, including Black Hawk and Huey helicopters, 7,800 M16 rifles, 181 grenade launchers for the police, 8,000 bulletproof helmets, 1,200 night vision goggles. We also changed policing tactics. A no-knock entry is when a SWAT team literally breaks down your door or smashes in through the windows, like in E.T. when the cops come flying in from every direction looking for E.T. So back to Minneapolis. In 1986, Minneapolis SWAT teams performed no-knock entries 35 times. 10 years later, in 1996, they performed no-knock entries 700 times. That's two every day. There were financial incentives for arresting more drug users. Federal grants to local police departments were tied to the number of drug arrests. Research suggests the huge surge in arrests from increased drug enforcement was due more to budget incentives than to actual increases in drug use. So what was the result? An explosion of our prison population. In 25 years, the U.S. prison population went from 350,000 to over 2.3 million. The United States now has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. We imprison a higher percentage of our black population than South Africa ever did during apartheid. Data shows that the increased prison population was driven primarily by changes in sentencing policy. There was no visible connection between higher incarceration rates and higher violent crime rates. If you are a drug felon, you are barred from public housing. You are ineligible for food stamps. You're forced to check the box on employment applications marking yourself as a convicted felon. A criminal record has been shown to reduce the likelihood of getting a callback or job offer by as much as 50%. The negative impact of a criminal record for an African American job applicant is twice as large as for a white applicant. In 2006, one in 106 white men was behind bars. For black men, it was one in 14. For black men between the age of 20 and 35, the age where families are built, it's one in 9. Overall, African Americans and white Americans use drugs at roughly the same rate, but the imprisonment rate of African Americans for drug charges is almost 6 times that of whites. It may be true that there isn't explicit racism in our legal system anymore, but it doesn't mean justice is blind. A study, a law in Georgia, permitted prosecutors to seek life imprisonment for a second drug offense. Over the period of the study, this law was used against 1% of white second-time offenders and 16% of black second-time offenders. As a result, 98% of prisoners serving life sentences under this law were black. Study, African-American youth in the U.S. make up 16% of all youth. But 28% of all juvenile arrests, 35% of youth sent to adult court instead of juvenile court, and 58% of youth admitted to adult state prison. Study, blacks on the New Jersey Turnpike make up 15% of all drivers, but 42% of all stops by police and 73% of all arrests. Among all drivers stopped, white drivers were 2 times more likely than black drivers to be carrying drugs. Study, Volusia County, Florida. 5% of drivers were black or Latino, but 80% of drivers stopped were black or Latino. Study, Oakland, California. Black drivers are twice as likely as white drivers to be stopped and 3 times more likely to be searched. In Minneapolis, Philando Castile had been pulled over 49 times in 13 years, mostly for minor infractions. The 49th time he was pulled over, he was shot by the officer while sitting inside his car. He'd been pulled over for a broken taillight. Chuck Colson's organization, Prison Fellowship, recently organized a manifesto that was signed by evangelical leaders asserting that our over-reliance on incarceration fails to make us safer or restore the people and communities who have been harmed. Unconscious bias seeps into schools, too, as white teachers often assume black students are less intelligent than they actually are. A gifted student usually has to be recommended by a teacher to move to a gifted track. When a teacher is black, an equally gifted white and black student have comparable chances of being recommended. When the teacher is white, the black student's odds of being recommended are cut in half. Are white teachers racist? No. Are they affected by bias? Yes. And it affects black students every day. So where are we? The average black household has 1/10 the wealth of the average white household. This didn't happen by accident. It happened by policy. We, the majority culture, told them where they could live and where they couldn't. Then we moved most of the jobs to the places we told them they couldn't live. When the predictable explosion of unemployment and poverty resulted in a predictable increase in drug use and crime, we criminalized the problem. We built $19 billion of new jails and sold grenade launchers to the police. As a result, a white boy born in America today has a 1 in 23 chance of going to prison in his lifetime. For a black boy, it's 1 in 4. And that is why people are angry. Many people care deeply about these issues. Many have suggested solutions. Some of those have been tested, with results ranging from moderate success to abject failure. I'm not here to tell you what the right solutions are, because I don't know. I'm just here to ask you to do one thing. It is the thing that begins every journey to a solution for every problem. What am I asking you to do? Care.